Ozean, ta nua Pensacoito, scuitse molt an stomach sna, scuo homish o chameoch. So what I just said was to our leaders, to our elders, friends and relatives, my Kushame, my ancestral name is scuitse molt, and it's a name put on me by my family elders, to the point that, this is 2002. After 5 years of researching and talking to my elders, and also we had found a audio tape from my great grandmother. In the 1960s, she was recorded and stating which names she wanted her great grandsons to carry, and Squitzaymult was one of them. So my late father carried the name, grandfather, his dad, and going back six generations. A great 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 grandfather carried the name. So that's has a lot to do with belonging to the land as part of our culture and heritage. I couldn't take on a name from somebody else's family, for example. So it's like an inherited right. So I follow the culture and our what we call our laws, our protocols. And those are things that our ancestors carried through colonization. So it's great thanks to them that they were able to start the process of adapting to the modern world, but also hung on to the culture and language and spirituality. So that's basically who I am.
That's great. Yeah, I we talked about this a little bit yesterday as well, as like how much of who we are is who we are historically, and how our identity is shaped by not just ourselves but the people that came before us. And so that's really a beautiful reminder, right? And especially when we talk about something like belonging, which is, we tend to situate it in like the here and now and the self, like my sense of belonging. But I'm imagining that it's bigger than that, right? It's,
For me, it is. And I look, because, I've been studying my history, Squamish Nation history, and family tree, of course, is always important. And it helps me to ground of who I am. And also, being brought up by my mom and really grandmothers and great grandmothers, it's the I think you don't even realize it that you're being raised in the culture. At the time, and of course, I can reflect back now and understand what they were doing. They were always talking about our history, about what our fathers and grandfathers contributed to Squamish Nation through politics, through sports, through music, language, customs. They were pretty amazing people, I think that. To where, and I got to live with one of my great grandmothers. Her story was, one of her stories, was her grandmother told her that she had to put the culture on the shelf for a while, and the new way to pray was coming and to embrace it, and she did that. And she also, of course, would have, raised her children that way, grandchildren, great grandchildren. There's something about our people being able to. I was just thinking about it this morning. Look at, and I call it ways of seeing the world they're in, and being able to deduce what they needed to do. The example I was thinking of this morning in the 1930s, we had a visit from, I think it was the king at that time. Wasn't Queen Elizabeth yet, the Pope and the Prime Minister. So what do you think of if you saw those three people in your community? Right? So great great grandmother, first thing that came to her, she said there was going to be war. By seeing those three levels, powerful people in one place. It's like, how do you deduce that? Right? So I think that's what our people were doing over the last, 200 years, 250 years was right from the beginning, being able to understand what was coming our way, and the Way of Explorers. Captain Vancouver arrives in 1792, and people knew, you know, he was coming, mm-hmm. and so the people were told to welcome him, which is something I think that resonates today. We never went to war. We were never conquered. Mm-hmm. But we were told, you know, they were told to share the land and the abundance of the land with those explorers. So we have a history of doing that. Another example I could think of is when Vancouver City burnt down, our people living in North Vancouver could see the fire, paddled across to see how they could help out. And by the time they got there, people were in the water, you know, just trying to survive. When we've seen the images in Hawaii, when you could see people standing in the water, it just kind of was almost like triggering. Because one of those ancestors that paddled over was a great-grandmother of mine. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you see the mural at shipyards, that's what that image is representing, mm-hmm. representing the Great Fire. Mm-hmm. But also our people paddling across and singing a paddle song as they went over. So these kinds of things that helps me understand what it means to belong. Mm. This is how our people are. Mm. You know, our ancestors have been that way, and you know, the reason we're still, we always say that everything we got comes from the land. Culture, language, customs, spirituality. You know, without wanting to sound negative or anything like that, I think, you know, our people paid a heavy price by staying on the land rather than fleeing. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of death, a lot of racism. You know, the intergenerational trauma started residential schools. And so I look at all that, and it's like, these are very strong people, you know, emotionally and spiritually and physically, right? And so they get our generation to where we're at today, mm-hmm. you know, despite all of that darkness and hate and mm-hmm. racism and laws. You know, here it was the Catholic Church. You know, there's the United Anglican, the churches that the federal government took out contracts with to start the residential schools. Mm-hmm. So now I'm thinking, you know, to belong here now and seeing what our ancestors have been through, you know, how are we going to continue to survive as Squamish and still fit in the modern world? Look at that message from back in the day. Mm-hmm. Our people built the school in 1899 with the intent to start adapting to the modern world, getting higher education. Mm-hmm. So that message, you know, even though they were stunted for three generations, always carried that message to the next generation to get higher education. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to my generation, the big quest for us and, you know, what our parents and grandparents wanted was to graduate high school. You know, of course, post-secondary was an option even then. But graduating was the goal. Yeah. So when we talk about, you know, what does it mean to belong here, it has a lot to do with survival. You know, we look at our nation here. So we begin our adapting to the modern world, understanding the laws, understanding politics. You know, people always understood politics. You know, I talked to a former law student in the early 90s. He wasn't indigenous, but he was at UBC. And his understanding was our people knew what the government was trying to do with laws. And right from the beginning, we're asking questions. And he was attributing the fact that our people knew what commerce was because we had trade. We had territories, you know. Mm. So it wasn't a foreign concept, even when the government was creating the early policies in the 1850s. And with the Indian Act, they're always standing up for hunting, fishing, land, language, you know, all of those things. You know, I could talk about my grandfathers, you know, being on council and mm-hmm. things that people did to survive. Mm. You know, if we look at pre-contact, take this area, what we call Squamish Territory. We were always Squamish people. But when the Indian Act came along, it isolated our people to reserves in North Vancouver, Squamish Valley, Sunshine Coast, downtown Vancouver, essentially breaking us up. So what are, talk about ways of seeing and ways of knowing what our people did in 1912. Kind of changes, depends on people's stories. Our people, each community on each reserve was a family. There are 16 of them. Picked a leader. Well, we call them leader today, they called them the person that would best represent them as a voice. So there are 16 of them. So what they did was over, I think it was 2023, so 11 years, they had conversations between each other. Somehow they were able to get the message. They weren't allowed to leave the reserves without permission. They couldn't gather with more than three people at a time without permission. So they found a way around that. What now I think still resonates today in our community is public consultation is paramount. Again, that's part of what I see as belonging here in Squamish. And so I see it as my responsibility that carries on. That, it's something that our, I'm not saying our youth don't know it, but ensure that they are aware of our history, right? Mm-hmm. Just like I was made aware of it. Parents and grandparents ensured that was at home. Mm-hmm. Because they were actually, it wasn't heresy at that point. They lived it.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because, I think that what you're talking about is the ways of seeing leads to the ways of knowing, or like they're independent, but they're related.
Yeah.
And the ways of being. So yeah. They're all tied together, and that's the strength, right? The resilience of the community is trusting that intuition, that gut, that emotion of like the way you perceive something is becomes the reality, right?
It does, yes.
And so I think that's really powerful in like acknowledging that and also passing that forward to your future generations, like you're saying, through storytelling and again, sharing. If you're shared the way that you see the world, then they learn to see the world in that same way. That's really wonderful. And I was wondering, so when we talk about belonging, is there a specific, so I'm thinking through the senses, right? Like there's taste, touch, smell, sound, sight. And when I say belonging, is there like an image that's created for you? Are there elements mm-hmm. that make up that feeling of belonging?
Yeah, absolutely. When we talk about belonging, it's like belonging to the land. So, one thing that's important to our people in our culture is water, right? That's the first thing that comes to my mind is, where do you find water? Well, it's the ocean or it's the rivers and creeks on the mountains. That's important to us when it comes to spiritual cleansing and kind of getting back to what pre-contact Squamish people did. So when I think about, the smell of the forest, I don't necessarily drink the water, but the feeling of water, that's refreshing, spiritually refreshing. Mm-hmm. We call spiritual cleansing. Mm-hmm. You could try to explain it, but you'd have to do it, right?
Mm-hmm. It's a felt thing.
Right? Yeah. The peace of the forest, There's something to that. Mm-hmm. And then we're told that, it's almost like you're, for lack of better terminology, it's like communing, right, with the forest and the water. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Is there a memory for you that sticks out when you think about that relationship to water or your relationship
to
the land?
Well, I think it's I guess when we talk about it, especially to our youth, it's like a maintenance thing
for yourself.
Yeah.
To maintain yourself.
Yeah. Yes, it's like good health, good mental health, good emotional well-being. Well, it's good spiritual well-being. So it's like when you're feeling out of sorts or like heavy. Like let's say you go to a funeral or when you go to the water, like that, it actually takes all that off. It takes weariness away.
Mm. It's beautiful because there's something in my culture where it's around salt and how salt is cleansing for a negative energy if it's accumulated over time. So my dad has this ritual, like I've grown up with my dad doing this, where he takes a palm full of salt and then rotates it around my head seven times clockwise, once anti-clockwise, and then he'll like wash it away in water. And so in
Takes
that
it
way
off.
he's like, he's taken away the energy, the bad
Negative.
energy, and I honestly feel way better every single
Yeah.
time. So
So you understand.
I understand,
Cedar
yeah.
boughs do the same thing.
What's cedar bough?
It's red cedar, the
Oh,
trees.
okay.
So it essentially does the same thing. So you were brushed off, and we take those boughs and they go to the water. So what we're taught is the water will take care of that, whatever was taken off of you. Just going to say another thing you might see if you go into a First Nations homes, the cedar boughs are over the door. So anybody walking in, if they're carrying negativity, it's left outside.
Yeah, that's so
So
good, yeah.
you don't want that, whatever they got coming into your space.
Yeah.
We even brush space.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so if there's anything negative or heavy feelings, we brush it out and then that goes to the water.
Yeah, water is this like equalizer,
It
right?
does,
It's
yeah.
this just washing it, literally
Neutralizing, I think, yeah.
washing it away, yeah. And it's so vast that there's space for
Powerful.
that,
You
right?
know, I've often said that as like such a powerful thing.
Yeah, I love the ocean,
So
but
when I see any of our waterways, it's like all that good medicine's like flowing by.
yeah, and it's free.
It's free, that's right. Well, I didn't want you to know about it, and you're right, some people do go to the ocean to do the same thing. It depends on your family culture. So you got the overarching culture, but each family has their own culture.
Specifics, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. And so, we're talking about belonging, we're talking about these rituals and traditions and practices, and I can't help but think that they're rooted in the present. There are a lot
Yeah.
of them, but they're also rooted in the past and
Yeah.
in the future. So
Yeah.
it's like you have gained knowledge from your ancestors, and you're using that, like this ritual that my dad does that like he probably learned from his parents. And similarly for the future, I will probably carry it on as well. And so I'm thinking about belonging in that context. It's like, does it transcend time in that way for you? How
Totally
do
believe
you
it does.
situate it? Yeah.
I think so. And if we look at, something my great grandmother, we were t well, I don't know how we were talking about passing away, but she said that depending how a person lives, kind of determines how they're going to die, how you live. So when you're consistently wanting to live in a good way and do, good, basically. What she had seen was a man that was chopping wood, and he sat down and he passed away. No suffering, no nothing. And she said, he lived a good life. She said, when it's time to go, you just leave. So it's kind of think about, there's a lot to that you think about, like, how are you going to live your life? Because in our culture, it's how you carry yourself is important. So the way I look at our culture and belonging is, we receive an ancestral name. There's teachings about how of ways of being. Don't drag that name through the mud. You actually don't own the name, it's just put it on you to carry forward. Because someone in the future is going to carry that name. And they're going to look back and it's like, how did that previous person that carried this name conduct themselves? So even though you're gone, you could still be, studied.
Yeah, the responsibility
It
of a
is
name.
totally responsible. It is a responsibility, and that's what I've thought myself is, once you receive a name, and it's the family elders that put it on you, there's expectations. The other part of it in our culture is if you don't live life in a good way could be taken off. So it's like an honor to carry a name. So that's another ceremony, right? And I've never seen it.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I'm trying to think of like how we, me as just a lay person, I don't value my name in that way. It's not a sacred name. It's just my name, right? Yeah. But it also ties me to people.
It does.
And comes with a history. And if I look at like all the Astranis in my ancestry,
yeah.
like they all, that name still has a weight, a value.
Yeah.
And responsibility, but I've never thought about it that way. So that's or like, what's my responsibility to my name, right?
I don't know if your parents said why they called you that, or you asked them.
Their answer is that I was crying in this way when I was born.
Oh.
So it was the sound that I was making.
Still, not mean something to them.
Yeah, right? yeah. It means grace. And they changed the spelling, so it's like it's their own version of the name.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, but I don't have any grace, so that's a problem.
Well, I think when we look at my customs and the culture, there's a lot of that built into it. I think wellness is built into it big time.
Going
to the water and. You know, every time there's a ceremony, we have many, like naming ceremony and funerals, mm-hmm. memorials, puberty rites. And every time you have a ceremony, the elders are going to speak to you and share teachings of ways of being and ways of seeing, ways of knowing, right?
Love it, yeah.
Right? So that's really, I think it just... It doesn't answer the question why we're here, but we're here, we have a role, we have a journey to do.
Yeah.
So when you encounter great loss, like parents or siblings, there's ways to deal with that, but you have a journey to do and to move on. Let them, what they say is, we can't grieve too much for them because we're holding them back from their journey.
Mm.
So we have to let them go. And in my own words, I'd say, by letting them go, I allow myself to go forward and continue.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, what's standing out for me is this idea of responsibility. And the responsibility doesn't end when you leave the planet, right?
That's right.
It continues after you leave and will continue for generations to come. But I'm wondering if we can look at responsibility from a different lens when it comes to belonging and think about what do you think the responsibility is for people like me who are guests on this land, visitors? What does it mean to be a good visitor or guest on mm-hmm. lands that are not our own?
I think one more, and Janice, I do the presentations, and we both agree that start by loving the land. Love the land. It'll actually lead you to understand us better as well. It leads to environmental and taking care of the land. And maybe somewhere in there there's going to be laws, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we want to vote for those politicians that are going to take care of the land or become one.
Yeah, and I think it sounds very hard to do, but it's actually so simple.
Yeah.
It's like going back to our nature as human beings and literally just spending time outside, like take your shoes off, like step on the bare grass or, hug a tree, sit with the cedars. And we're so blessed in Vancouver. There's so many opportunities, right?
Well, I like Janice's story where there was one lady from South America. I think she might have moved here. And she was in Victoria, and she saw the red cedar trees, and she was just so thankful to be here. She was hugging a tree, talking to it, and it actually talked back to her.
Oh, wow.
So that's one of the things we talk about. Does their time in the spirit world doesn't match our time here?
Mm.
I don't know if you're aware of that concept.
No. Please explain.
So you're asking, does what I do here go into the future? So I'd say yes, it does. Well, what we're taught is that time in the spirit world is different than time here. So what we talk about is what we have in culture and customs and language, spirituality comes from there. So how do we connect? How do we connect to that so we can get those messages? Well, cedar trees are one of the ways. Sending food, burning food, what we call, to the send it to the ancestors, get a message back.
So what you're saying is not necessarily in the past, it's also in the future.
It is.
Yeah.
I think, with the one lady who was telling me that their time over there, the best she could explain it was, and not necessarily accurate, like one day here could be a year there, or one year here could be a day there. Totally different things.
Yeah, alternate realities, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what we think about the spirit world. I think the things we do here lead us to that place. Probably the best teaching for that is the ancestors tell us don't waste a day.
Because it could be a
We're not
year.
here very long. So as a younger person, that doesn't click because really, you don't have that big a concept of time. I totally understand that now at my age. So we talk to youth, it's like, I feel like urgency to get messaging to them, teachings. Like what I've learned, I want to hand that down to my children. I'm doing, working on that.
Yeah, absolutely. Don't waste a day. I think that we're all guilty of, sometimes life just gets a lot and you just want to hide and not be a human. And that's okay sometimes, but
But it does come back to good mental, emotional health,
yes.
well-being, right?
What do you do when you're feeling that way instead of, the vices of like detachment, which is like
Right.
television or, whatever. Instead, you go to the ocean or you be with nature. That
Yeah.
could really just change your way of seeing, right?
Right.
As well of like, why do I need rest? What does rest mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's such an important lesson that I'm learning.
It is. I think it is. And so we look at what how we've been. I mean, it's like we very seldom say no to doing anything with cultural and cultural teaching or weaving or the Vancouver Art Gallery. And I think it's about two things. It's like educating our youth, but it's also educating the general public about who we are.
And being visible, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think Antje had a pretty good deduction because she's like, how many band members in Squamish Nation? It's like, then it was like 4,000. It's like, wow, that's pretty, it's a relatively small people making an impact in the city. A big impact.
As it should be, right?
Yeah,
Yeah.
but that takes energy
F
to.
yeah, it's true. It's unfortunate on one hand that you have to be so hyper visible
Yeah.
because you deserve rest
Yeah.
and like being with community, but at the same time it's so wonderful to see people occupying space that's like rightfully theirs,
Yeah.
right?
So it's about that kind of messaging as well. And I think it's, I mean, it does go back to our ancestors standing up. I would say the 1850s when the early policy started with the Canadian government crafting policies, how they're going to manage First Nations people back then. That's what they called us, right? They called us Indians, actually. And so I think for me, that's has led up to where we're at today, like decades of standing up. To where now in Vancouver here, acknowledging us, actually, the city, Vancouver Gallery, other institutions, corporate, are acknowledging that we are here, we're from here, and we want to honor that. But I think it's all that history of our people standing up and even protesting, right? Lawsuits, you name it.
And it's also other people's ways of seeing, right?
Yeah,
It's
that's
like
right.
them acknowledging. that there is a wrong here. Like
Yeah.
there was that you know,
I mean, we
reparations
have
are due.
talked to new immigrants, and they're kind of starting to get angry that we thought we're coming to a good country because we tell them about our history. Residential schools, racism, disease, laws, you know. I'd call it the abuse of rule of law, really. I know there's a paper there somewhere for somebody to write, but it's not just indigenous people either.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that there's, it's not, I what I'm going to say is like not that simple, but I think there's synergy in our collective struggle or survival, right? Like you were talking about earlier, it's like we don't have the same history, but I'm also a person of color and the system doesn't like me either.
Yeah.
And so in some ways that our paths forward are intertwined and we need to help each other.
I truly believe that. And I think, you know, people that are, some people are maybe fleeing a country where they're being persecuted.
Yeah.
And I think for our people, of course, we are persecuted. So hopefully we can provide some hope to some people that, you know, we're still here. And now we're actually, I think, the early stages of coming out of what I call that dark era. I mean, we've still got ways to go. Intergenerational trauma, you know, all that healing that has to be done starting. And we could see it starting maybe in our schools, the little ones. You know, we had a little guy, 4 years old. He was weaving and, you know, we did the finishing touches, tied it on him, said he was going to do his Robin song and his Robin dance.
Oh.
And that was like amazing for me because in the morning they started with a greeting of the day song and a prayer in our language, and then they were weaving. And it really struck me that, you know, a few generations ago he would have been punished for any of those things.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Or even killed, right?
Yeah.
To where now our people, and this is done by all of our own people, right? Nobody can do it for us. Building the school, having those teachers to teach him those things, is, I think, is the beginning of the end of intergenerational trauma. I think that's what we want.
Yeah.
So that he has doesn't carry that baggage of, you know, just how the nuns and the priests and the government has treated our people to have that freedom in spirit and mind to do what he thinks he wants to do.
Yeah, you're healing through practice.
Right.
And practicing together and teaching practice.
Yeah.
And as an artist and weaver, like, that is part of your legacy.
Yes, it is. And I think it's an amazing thing. I think it goes back to the spirit world where, you know, you're like tapped, you know, this is what you're going to do. You know, we started out just wanting to learn weaving, you know, 20 years ago.
Wow.
We wanted to bring it back to life. We had one weaver. Like, we wanted to do something about that and came home and started teaching elders that went to residential school, little ones, you know, education department, and anybody that wanted and was willing to learn. And it turned into something way bigger than that over 20 years.
Yeah, dedication and continuing to show up, right?
Every yeah, and it really led us, you know, and I've said it, it's like we didn't sit down and write out a strategic plan that actually led us where we needed to go.
There's also, like, I don't know if you believe in fate or destiny of, like,
I
like
think
you were
so.
Saying the spirit world guided you.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's one of those things where this message will come to a person if they're open to it. You know, if you're locked or shut down to it, then it'll move. I don't know if you've heard that before, but it'll find a person that will receive the message. Somewhere in there, Janice and I were both ready to, you know,
receive
it. Well, what had happened was we attended a weavers gathering in Washington State, and with 700 weavers of every kind, and she knew some of them, and she wanted to go visit them and maybe buy something off of them. And the lady had a woven tunic for sale, and Jan asked her how much. And the lady's like, well, I could sell it to you or I could teach you for the same money.
Wow.
So when that moment our lives took a 180, John tracked me down. He said, "Want to learn?" I was like, "Of course."
That's so awesome and so serendipitous, right? Like, right? Had you not had that conversation, your whole life would be different.
On that on one moment, I'd say one moment in time, and then it's like, now we're going this direction, right? You know, we're a couple that gets together later in like midlife, and like within so that we get together 2001, and this was 2003, mm. October.
Really was your mission.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Meant to come together and do this work. So the energy came. I was working full time, you know, teaching nights and weekends. And, you know, things you don't get tired, right?
Because you love it.
Yeah, you love it. You know, people go with passions. Like, yeah, it's that. But there's more to it than that, I think. You know.
Because it's a way of seeing and being.
Yeah. And yeah. I think it's spiritual energy. It's like, keep going. Go this way and go that way. So we wanted to teach in our community, and then our relatives in Seashelt found out about us and invited us up there. Mm. Said, of course, we'll come. And the story that goes with that is one of the young women that was to be our student had a vision, a dream. And in her dream, she'd been working on herself, you know, like becoming clean and sober and what they call her, some people call her Red Road. In her dream, her ancestors acknowledged that. And they're in a room, and they bring her to a trunk, and inside it is a weaving. Said, now you're ready to do this, and you're going to learn how to make weavings. Mm. And we're going to introduce you to the lady that's going to help you get there. And in the vision, they bring her to a door, open the door. It's the cultural director for Seashelt. Mm. And so she told the lady her vision, and the director's like, well, nobody knows it yet, but I'm inviting Buddy and Janice up to teach us. And the young lady had the vision, is like, oh no, they know.
Yeah.
So those kind of feedback things
we get. Wow, that's like chills.
It is. Like... You know, so we got a few of those, you know, so that's the spirit world, right? Mm-hmm. Like, how could we say no to continuing on? And their relatives in Siam and Paul River find out, so we go there and then Vancouver. So now we're hopscotching around the Lower Mainland. Lummi, we're still going to Lummi.
Yeah.
You know, so we kind of touch down in different places that don't have weavings, but they have their history. It's there, and we encourage them to go find it. Yeah. It's not our history, it's their history.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so beautiful, buddy. Thank you for sharing that with me. I am all out of questions for you. But I was wondering if there's anything else you want to add, or if there's anything you want to ask me.
I think, you know, just when you sit down to do your art, just open up your heart and mind. Mm-hmm. And whatever comes out is going to be through your hands.
Yeah.
You know, you don't know what it's going to be like.
I really don't.
Yeah, but it'll come, right? And that's kind of the beauty of it too, right? Yeah.